the Mariners and the Red Sox have been a major factor as far as talking trades. And is Castillo going somewhere? Is Casas going somewhere? Well, today we're bringing both sides together and maybe try to figure out a solution. Let's get into it.
Strike three call. The Wings with another slider takes care of Walker.
Hit hard by Casas the other way to the wall. And Tristan Casas
way back to right. Sailing, sailing. Yoshida cranks one to right. Way back there. That ball is.
Welcome to Touching Bases Podcast. Good to see you guys all again. Today I have two guests. I have Gordo from WEEI Radio. He also does the Talk Tessie podcast, which is specifically for the Red Sox. He's done multiple interviews with the Red Sox players. That's a little bit more in-depth side of things and maybe knows a little bit more on the Red Sox side as far as these trade talks. I also have Colby Patineau joining me with Lock On Mariners. He also is part of Control the Zone with his other, I guess, old school. Is that the best way of saying it? Old school podcast that used to run. Very informative as far as the Mariners, following them every single day and doing this day in and day out. So it helps me because I obviously don't do this full time. These guys have a little bit more in-depth information. So thank you guys for joining me today on this podcast. So obviously today there's been a couple moves that we're all tracking. Christian Walker is taken by the Astros. That literally stabbed me in the heart and twisted it about 35 times. It's not the fact that I was high on him coming to Seattle, even though that was like a target. Supposedly, I think he was a target by a lot of different teams, but the fact that it was the Astros, that hurts. That sucks. So that's one less first baseman that's on the market. And that, to me, says that's one a little bit of a degree in reduced chances for the Red Sox to make a move, getting rid of a first baseman, because now you're down to Santana, Turner, and Pete Alonso versus having that fourth guy there. That was probably a little bit cheaper than Alonso. It kind of creates a gap. Mm-hmm. From a Red Sox perspective, I mean, is Casas still on the board, or are we talking now he's probably just staying put where he's at?
You know, it depends who you talk to, because he's got to be like the most polarizing player I've seen in Boston in so long. And it's really due to no fault of his own. He's a different kind of guy, but he's basically like Red Sox fans. He's your favorite. And there's a subset of fans where they just don't like him. And as it pertains to the trade rumors, it's caught a lot of people around here by surprise that he's been seemingly dangled so much by the team. But it does feel like it's sort of in the right situation he could go. It's just a matter of what that situation is. And the Mariners are such an interesting team to talk about that with, because they've got five awesome pitchers, but four of them are so young and inexpensive. And obviously Castillo's great, but he's a little bit older, making more money. And it creates a lot of good discussion, especially with the Red Sox fans, about, you know, where they would move him, if they would move him, what they would move him for, if they're open to it. So I tend to lean towards he's probably not going to get moved, but that's just a matter of odds. It does feel like he's on the table as much as anybody right now.
Gotcha. And I mean, we have heard the back and forth, and my argument with this is that whole discussion of Devers going over to first and then his agent saying, no, he's not going to play first. And then I still push back like, well, who's paying him? Like, where's he getting his paycheck? Who's in charge here? That's just me. And that sounds, it might be a little obnoxious on my end, but it's like, really, my employer's paying me to do something. I'm going to go do it. And I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And that opens the door for Arenado. That opens the door for Bregman, or any of these guys that they could possibly bring on. And Arenado could probably play first as well. He's been open to saying that as well. But I mean, if Casas was to get moved, and it doesn't even have to be the Mariners, it could be any other team, I'm going to say that he would stay if there was a deal with the Marlins, but even though that's been whistled dead, like, if Casas were to go, what is your thoughts as far as a backup? Because, or who's going to replace him at first? If there's, you know, no other moves after that, if it was just as is, made a trade for a pitcher, and what's happening at first base?
I think if Casas went in a deal, the move definitely would be to move Devers over there and not to get involved in the free agent first base market. I think they would be a lot likelier to try to, because infield defense last year, the Red Sox had the worst infield defense in baseball. And coming off a year in 23 where they had the worst defense in baseball, one of the worst defenses in baseball history, they improved their outfield defense a ton, but the infield defense was still bad. And obviously so much of that was due to missed time from guys like Trevor Story. Tristan Casas missed a lot of time. They had a revolving door at second base. And then Devers isn't a particularly good defensive third baseman. If they moved Casas, I think they'd try to take advantage, move Devers over to first, and try to shore up that left side of the infield. Both Bregman and Arenado come to mind. They're both top-of-the-line third-base defense guys. I think if they moved Casas, that would probably be the path that they take, would be to move Devers over across the diamond.
Do you think that would cause issues with Devers?
I mean, maybe, because you don't generally – his agent has come out and said a couple of times now that Devers takes pride in third base, and I know that he takes pride in third base. He doesn't want to move over. That said, Devers, he's a laid-back, chill, happy-go-lucky guy, and Alex Cora is as good of a communicator as it gets. I think if they wanted to move Devers, it would end up being okay. He would take it, and he would do it. I think he knows that eventually, whether it be now in his age 28 season or in a couple seasons when he's in his 30s, he knows he's going to end up either moving over to first base or DHing at some point in this long contract that he has with the Red Sox. But the only thing I would worry about as a Red Sox fan is when Devers is at his best, when he's engaged in the game, when he's playing well, it transitions to defense. When he's playing good defense, he hits the ball well. And when he hits the ball well, he plays good defense. If he's not out there,
goes against Garrett Cole, then he's fine. He's going to hit 10 home runs.
Exactly. But there you go. It's like when he's locked in, he's locked in. Yeah. Is he going to be able to be locked in if he's DHing? I don't know. I think that's maybe why you hear a little bit of the first base talk, because that would keep him engaged. But I don't think he'd love it, but I think he would do it, is basically where I'm going with that.
Yeah, and that kind of revolves – that also kind of brings – I mean, we're talking about DH. That's where my mind goes straight to oh, my gosh, why am I blanking on – I'm blanking on his name. This is crazy because it was my next point. Yoshida. Mm. Jeez. Oh, my gosh. That was bad. I just had a brain aneurysm. So, because Colby, I was going to mention this to you because it seems like he's been kind of like this sideline talk as far as trades. Like, everybody just keeps throwing him in there when the Casas name came up, because obviously Casas was just the headliner every single time we talked about Castillo or talked about anybody going over to Boston. And of course, this was like last week or about a week, maybe a week before the Cubs went wild and then the Yankees started picking up players. But like, with Garver, people seem to have some sort of trust in him that he might bounce back, because that's been his routine with Texas and, you know, any time before this. Mm-hmm. Like, would Yoshida play? Would you see the Mariners having some interest in Yoshida at this point? I know he's an outfielder, but obviously we'd probably want him for DH.
Yeah, that's probably where, if they were interested in him, that's probably where they would play him. But right now, Seattle's outfield is... it's second best position group behind the starting pitching. You know, Randy Rosarena, Julio Rodriguez, Luke Rayleigh, Victor Robles had an incredible second half. I think the problem they're going to run into with Yoshida is that they're kind of already going to have a DH. One of their outfielders is going to DH every day for the most part. Garver will DH some, but right now he's their primary backup catcher, so they're not going to want to do that all that often. So I think Yoshida is kind of a tough fit here, because especially if he came over with, you know, Casas, like, he's going to play first base, and now Rayleigh is going to be your primary DH, or Robles or Rosarena, whoever's not in the field that day. You don't really have room on that roster. And a big, you know, bonus for, you know, big reason why the Mariners would consider trading Castillo, a big part of it is to clear a lot of that salary off. And if you're taking Yoshida, who I think is $17, $18 million this year, you're not really clearing any salary, not enough. Yeah. So it's a tough fit there. I do think that Yoshida would help the lineup. He's a pretty solid hitter. He's just not a great player overall. So I don't look at that and I say there's a fit there. I don't see it. I think Seattle wants to keep their DH open. They don't want a full-time DH. They like to rotate guys. And I think right now they have the rotation now. If they get a first base, assuming they get a first baseman, they have that rotation, because if the game needed to be played tomorrow, Luke Rayleigh is probably your first baseman. And Garver's probably your DH. So in that sense, yes, you do have a spot to give. But because the trade talks have been centered around Casas, like, no, Tristan would be the first baseman, which would mean Rayleigh would DH, and now Yoshida nowhere really to play on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, unless he rotates with Arozarena, and that doesn't sound very appealing because no. Then you're taking somebody that we just got that should be full-time out of the lineup. That was funny because I think I was watching your live stream earlier and somebody was just like, Mitch Haniger to first? Like, oh, God. Yeah, no. Like, how bad are we? How bad is this lineup getting? And I mean, I mean, we mentioned that, like, the idea of Casas and Yoshida for Castillo. And, I mean, Gordo, I saw your face a little bit. You gave a little bit. So you're like, nah, like, that's
if you're asking me, I'm as high on Tristan Casas as anybody. I think this guy has an incredibly bright future. I think he's a 35 to 40 homer guy. Not too many guys control the strike zone as well as he does, and to do it with power like he does. It really for him is so much about staying healthy, and that's kind of the one true unknown with him. If I'm Seattle, and like, I get that Yoshida's not the perfect fit, and I don't know if their front office agrees just based off of some of what's been written by people over by you guys. But if it were me, I would take on a bad contract to get a hold of that guy. Like, I get the Yoshida fit isn't great, but if it's for Castillo and you're making kind of the money even, and it were to get you Tristan Casas and kind of shore up first base for the next 4 years, it's not ideal, but maybe something to consider. Because if it's me, I don't know if the Casas for Luis Castillo trade rumors have as much legs as is kind of being presented out there, just because the value between the two guys is so, just if you consider the team control and the amount of money that they're making and their age, it just doesn't make sense to me, at least in a one-for-one swap.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the pushback, I think, on both sides. I think Seattle sees Castillo. I mean, he is in the ace role. He is the number one. If you look at their rotation, you look at numbers, that's a different factor, because each year we've seen Kirby at the very top, we've seen Logan Gilbert at the very top, and Castillo, he was great that 2.99 ERA year, and he has come down very slightly, and I say this all the time, he is declining. He's declining 0.2 ERA each year. That's, we're not talking like full run ERAs per year.
Yeah, he's still a stud. He's still
exactly. And understand his value, which if you talk contract wise, I understand that kind of pushback. But then I also look at injury prone versus durability. Very durable. You have Castillo is very durable, and then like you mentioned, that causes like that hamstring, and he had another injury. It was a back.
It was like a rib cartilage thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like. And I don't know how he's getting these injuries. Maybe it just, you know, take him away from maybe this specific exercise or work on building up that area. But like, this is where the kind of the balance comes in, where I'm like, I think most Mariner fans, and I think the organization values Castillo more than Casas, because not only are they biased to their pitching, obviously, if you know anything about Jerry, he loves his pitching, and they've done a really good job as far as drafting and developing pitching, obviously. But then also you have the Red Sox front office that is like, this is our generational, potentially first base power hitter who can be basically, I would say, the Vladdy of, you know, what Vladdy was expected to do when he came up and started playing at first base. And it's like, okay, you're trying to compare. I'm going to say proven talent with Castillo, because he's proven himself in the MLB, with unproven talent with injury concerns. But that ceiling could be higher than what Castillo can offer. And that's where I kind of see a little bit of imbalance there. But Colby, you mentioned, I don't know which episode it was, but you guys were talking about, yeah, one of those. You guys were talking about the I just want to recall this properly, because you mentioned that, you know, we were getting a lot of information from the Mariner side, mostly from Boston reporters. And then we are hearing stuff from Seattle reporters, and we're like, all right, and is this a ruse? Like, is this just all talk to build hype and get people calling for Castillo? And is, and I was thinking, well, what if the Red Sox are doing the same thing? And this is like some sort of ploy to get people calling them, and there's no deal at all.
Yeah. I mean, one thing to keep in mind in the off season is that like 90% of what a GM says publicly is bullshit. Like it's just there to create leverage. It's there to, you know, kind of, you know, you're trying to create leverage with free agents, right? Like if the Mariners want Carlos Santana at X and Santana wants Y, then the Mariners have incentive to be like, well, we're talking to these other first basemen then. So that's something to keep in mind, is that, yeah, like a lot of times what we hear is more of a leverage play than what is actually happening, but not always. And so you have to take these things seriously. What I hear comes from Seattle sources, right? So I'm only getting one side of this equation. And so I've heard, you know, Peter Gammons went on Twitter the other night and said the Mariners just don't like Tristan Casas. And I've heard the opposite, that the Mariners do like Casas. They just don't like him as much as the Red Sox are valuing him. And if you're a Mariners fan, or if you're Jerry Dipoto, more importantly, right, if you're running the Mariners, you look at it, you say, okay, well, why is there this discrepancy here? Well, first and foremost, Seattle, right, they're a pitching factory. Like, that's what they do. However, they have a bit of a gap right now. If they trade Luis Castillo, Emerson Hancock is getting the ball. Dude stinks. Okay.
He's the nicest guy in the organization, though.
Remember? I've been told, don't care. Not very good. He's like a number seven starter. You don't know if Logan Evans is any good. Like, you don't have the Luis Castillo replacement on hand. And when you go out and you look at what's going on in free agency, they can't afford, like, even if they clear all $24 million of Castillo's money, right, they're giving at least half that to a mediocre starting pitcher. Matthew Boyd got $14.5 million off of 8 starts. Like, Alex Cobb got $15 million. Like, you're not getting a number five for less than $12 million. And so even the money that you free up in this hypothetical trade, half of it's going to get a pitcher who's worse than Castillo.
That's why I think that in any Luis Castillo trade, they've got to be getting pitching depth back. Because even if they want to put Emerson Hancock in that five spot, you're going to need someone, some AAA depth at least, to be able to step in. Because pitchers go down. Like, I know that, I mean, Brian Wu went down at least a couple of times last year. And he obviously, Hancock's an unknown. So, and I could say this from experience as a Red Sox fan, not having pitching depth over the years, it kills you.
Yeah.
Yeah, last year was rough for you as far as Bello goes. That big extension and then him throwing, what was it, 4.3 ERA or something like that.
But at least he made his starts. Like, the issue for the Red Sox last year was Lucas Giolito goes down in spring training. Yep. Garrett Whitlock has injuries, what, like 3 or 4 starts into the season. And now you're going basically minor league depth every fifth day for the rest of the season starting in like April.
And I think this is one of the disconnects we see between, because, like, obviously I see a lot of Luis Castillo, like, content, right, when I'm searching. And I see it from Red Sox fans. I mostly see it from Mariner fans, but I do see it from Red Sox fans. And I feel like there's this disconnect because we talk about Castillo's older, he's not what he used to be, and blah, blah, blah. And, like, it's all true. Like, they're not, you know, lying. They're not making stuff up. But we're not putting into context the value of pitching in Major League Baseball, specifically starting pitching that can go 180 to 200 innings. There's not a lot of those guys out there. And when you throw on top of that, the guys who are as good as Castillo, who also do that, there's probably, I don't know, 15 to 20 guys who do that year in, year out. Castillo is one of them. So is he declining a little bit? Sure. Is he older? Yes. Is the contract, you know, is it a factor? Yeah, it is. But if Castillo was on the open market right now, he would be making $27 to $30 million. Like, Castillo is a bargain, even coming off the year he is. So that's the disconnect I see, is that I don't necessarily think Mariner fans are treating him like an ace anymore. I think most Mariner fans would tell you that Logan Gilbert is the ace of our staff. And you know, Castillo might be the number five, really, in our staff, because Wu and Miller took off. But Castillo's very good. Like, he may be the number four in the Mariner staff. He would not be the number four in like 23 other spots, right? 20 others, or not 10 other spots. He wouldn't be the number four. And the market for pitching right now is so tight, and there's not a ton of options out there, and they're so expensive for guys who have less track record than even Luis Castillo, that you got to adjust for that. So it's just one of those things where I feel like Mariner fans are either overvaluing, and I can only speak from a Mariners fan perspective here, they're either overvaluing Castillo and, you know, thinking that he is like a Gerrit Cole in his prime, which he's not, or they're drastically undervaluing him because they see this as the Mariners just trying to dump salary, which, to be fair, the Mariners have earned that reputation with this fan base. But I can tell you that's not factual. The Mariners are not looking to trade Luis Castillo just to save the money, because if they were going to do that, they would have already done it.
And they openly said that too, right, that they aren't trading anyone unless it's going to be on the rotation, unless it's going to help.
Yeah. The Mariners are
you also touched on it. You touched on it at the very beginning of the podcast with Christian Walker too. If they were gonna trade Luis Castillo primarily to dump salary, that was the best target. Yep. That was the most likely target. Like, I don't with him being off the board, if it were purely for salary dumper, I still don't even know if Pete Alonso would be an option for them if they traded Castillo and didn't take much salary back. So I really do think the Christian Walker signing elsewhere did complicate like a potential Luis Castillo trade for the Mariners, because like a big part of it is having, like, obviously you want to get value back and get good value for a really good player, but so much of it is having money and flexibility to go elsewhere and improve the offense. And I mean, I don't know if you guys have been talking about other targets besides Walker that are going to be in that 15 to 20 AAV range, but Christian Walker to me definitely felt like the best fit for the Mariners.
Yeah.
I can't think of anybody else. I mean, the only other first baseman that have been brought up is Santana and Turner. And I mean, they're both more clubhouse guys that can produce. And I think Santana would be fine because he's proven his ability to hit in Seattle. And so that's an option, but that's not like a salary dump needed player. You know, that's something that could be afforded with what has been allotted speculatively.
You could fit them into your budget right now.
Exactly. You got problems if you got to dump Luis Castillo to add Carlos Santana.
Yeah, exactly.
Big problems, especially since you just dropped a big contract with Polanco, even though I understand, and Colby, you know, you set me straight because that night I was not thinking right, but like they've dumped $32 or $37 million in salary, and that's now pretty much all going to arbitration. So which
guys are getting raises.
When you do the math, it's like, okay, makes sense, but holy shit.
Yeah.
Like that's how much we dump just to keep the guys that we want.
Yeah. Guys get expensive fast, particularly pitching. Yeah. Gets really expensive really fast.
This is the reason why I'm not an accountant. and of course I'm trying to look at this. I mean, as far as like you're mentioning, Colby, the fact that, you know, Castillo in most situations is going to be the ace of other teams as he comes in, even though he might not be considered that here in Seattle. Right. I think with the money he's making, that's just kind of the natural spot you put him. You're like, he's the highest paid. He's a veteran.
Sure.
That's that. But Gordo, if I ask you, like looking at your opening day, starting pitching, and I'm saying as of right now, even though it's been put out multiple times by multiple sources that they're not done looking for a starting pitcher, and I understand why, because half your season right now you have guys coming back in June. I mean, Giolito and Sandoval, they're both not coming back till maybe
Giolito should be ready for opening day.
Yeah, you think so? Because I know he got it's about a year, and I know he got his internal brace on the 12th of March. So if he there, probably be back in time. But at least Sandoval won't be back until mid-year. Same with Whitlock. So as it sits, you have Crochet, Haug, Bello, Crawford, and Fitz. Fitz, I don't know too much about. Great ERA, but only 4 starts and 20 innings. So, I mean, so far, cool. I mean, he's done good for you guys as a number 5. But where would you put Castillo in your rotation if a deal were to happen?
If a deal were to happen, so right now I think the Sox rotation, I think it's Crochet, Hauk, Bayo third, Giolito, and Cutter Crawford. That's your 5 right there.
Okay.
And then Fitz and Criswell fit a little bit more into the minor league depth side of that. I think if they got Castillo, the move would probably be to then flip one of your younger controllable guys. I think most Sox fans think Cutter Crawford. And, you know, obviously where he fits in kind of just depends on who you ask, because, you know, he would be the most proven guy. He'd be a veteran who's still really good, so maybe deserving of that opening day start. But I think, you know, in your head, Crochet is the ace and Castillo would be the veteran right there, right behind him. But I mean, it would transform the rotation that's had problems in the past. Obviously, the addition of Crochet is a huge start to that. I know they're still looking for more, but to have you have two all-stars at the top of that right now, and to add a third would be transformational for a rotation that has definitely taken its lumps over the years.
As far
quick,
as the
quick little, go ahead. No, quick little thing here on just because you brought him up. I can tell you with some confidence, the Mariners like Cutter Crawford. They should. Yeah, I mean,
they should, because he's perfect for that ballpark. Right. His only problem is letting up homers.
Yeah, exactly. I do know that, you know, the Mariners are, you know, again, they're worried about how they would replace Castillo. So if there was a way to get Crawford into a deal like this, I think that the Mariners would bite on it. And I'm guessing that's why nothing's really advanced that far, just because it's hard to add on either side to get to where both teams need to go. But I have heard that the Mariners do like Cutter Crawford quite a bit, and that is a guy that they would like to walk away from if they were going to trade Castillo. They would like to have Crawford in hand. And he's also, you know, I think ARB1, he's only going to make a couple million bucks, so that would help them not have to go spend $12 million, $15 million, $18 million on whoever the Cutter Crawford lookalike is out there in free agency. So I have heard specifically that the Mariners, they would have interest in a guy like Cutter Crawford.
And this right here is why a deal like this is so complicated. Mm-hmm. Because I just went out and said that if the Red Sox added Castillo, Cutter Crawford is probably the odd man out and probably gets traded. They try to reap some value there. And you just said the Mariners really like Cutter Crawford. And so you ask yourself, why does that swap not happen? And the issue is the money. Because if you talk about how much a player outperforms their contract, which is how these front offices operate, it's like how much surplus value does this guy bring me? When you have Cutter Crawford pitching like he does, which is pretty good, on he might just make a couple of mil this year. Yeah. Now, obviously, I think Luis Castillo's outperforming his contract too, which says a lot. It says how good he is, but sure, it's a hell of a lot easier to outperform a couple mil than it is to outperform what, 24-ish million that Castillo's making. So it gets complicated. I think if you're talking Red Sox and Mariners, it gets complicated because the Mariners giving up as good of a pitcher as Castillo, I don't think they'd feel great downgrading from Castillo to Crawford. But the Red Sox, I feel like, would want, just because of the surplus value that Cutter Crawford brings, they would want to receive more from Seattle in that sequence. So it really is complicated.
And who would you, I mean, theoretically, from what you've read going over there, like if it was a Cutter Crawford, because I agree with you, I think he would do really well in Seattle. The fact that he threw 175 strikeouts last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was the second most on that team last season. A 4.36 ERA, I mean, I know that will drop just being in Seattle alone. It's just a pitcher's ballpark. It is what it is. And, you know, being a righty, it'll only help him out there. But like if it was like a Crawford deal with somebody else, like what do you think Boston would be like? We'll give you Crawford plus this guy for Castillo. Cause I'm kind of curious. I just want to bounce some ideas off there. Cause I mean, I know Colby has a lot of in-depth idea of like what the Mariners probably would take and would need. And I don't want to keep throwing Casas out there, but I'm assuming there's something else that could work that's not an outfielder that Boston might be willing to let go of, because obviously you guys have a surplus of infielders, and especially ones coming up that everybody's talking about. And in fact, I think I saw a post saying that Roman Anthony and Mayer are going to be the stars of 2025. So it's like, all right, well, what are we talking as far as making moves? Because what does that mean? You're going to move Trevor Story off the team? And that's a big contract. I don't think the Mariners are interested in that, but you know,
they were when he signed with Boston.
Yeah.
The Mariners were one of the teams then on Trevor Story. They made an aggressive offer. He chose Boston. bullet dodged.
Yeah.
But yeah, very much, because I don't think he can. The fact that his contract's so big, and there's what, how many games has he played? Three?
Something
like that?
He played maybe like 40.
He got hurt pretty bad against the Angels, if I'm right. He dove to his right. Yeah. Like, I feel bad for the guy. He's a heck of a player when he's healthy, but.
Yeah. No, but the infielder thing is interesting, because they do, even beyond the stars, like beyond the Marcelo Meyer, Christian Campbell kind of stars they have coming up there, they've got some good middle infield depth. And David Hamilton stole 33 bags last year, 2.5 WAR. Vaughn Grissom, obviously a very down season for him, but just a year ago he was the return for Chris Sale. Really good bat to ball skills, working on his strength. The issue there, though, is those aren't pieces that I think alone get you to Luis Castillo. And if you're talking a Cutter or a Casas, I don't think the Red Sox would trade either of those guys for Castillo straight up. I think if they're trading Casas, they wanted Bryce Miller or Brian Wu for Tristan Casas, and the Mariners were out on that. I know we keep hearing about the Casas Castillo thing. I don't see there being legs to that format.
Even if there's prospects involved on both sides that fit needs.
I mean, it's not impossible. The Mariners have plenty of prospect depth. It's just and high level prospect depth too. One of the best farm systems in the league right now. But it's such a complicated format. Like, yeah, in theory, you could see a Casas for Castillo and several prospects format. I don't know if the Mariners want to go there. And I honestly don't know why they should with the first baseman that are available on the free agent market that can be had for reasonable prices. Teams don't really pay first baseman anymore. I just don't know why they specifically would trade Castillo and prospects. Obviously Casas is great, but it's like, if you can, you know, Justin Turner is a clubhouse leader. Carl Santana is great. Paul Goldschmidt, former MVP on the market. Like,
he has another big name being talked about. Yeah.
That's especially, just, it's complicated. It's complicated with Christian Walker not being out there, I think.
Sorry, Colby, if you go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. I mean, what is the I don't understand this part, because and I'm going to circle back to what I said earlier as far as Boston wants another starting pitcher. That's what they're looking for, another rotation arm. And it's like, how many rotation arms are they looking for? Like, who are we? Because at this point, it's like, okay, you must be offering trade deals, because I mean, who else are you going to sign for a starting rotation? And that would make me assume that Crawford is probably on that trading block, or you're gonna move Giolito, maybe, just because, I don't know. Yeah, or you're moving Trevor Story just because he's injured all the time and someone wants to take a chance on him. Like, what's the idea of picking up another rotation arm? Because it seems like it's not bad. Are you looking for someone that is shoddy, that is going to make it half the season so that Sandoval can come back in? Like, what's the thought process there?
I think the thought process is just seeing the price for pitching. You guys talked about it with Boyd getting such a big contract off of just a few starts, with Alex Cobb getting so much money, and the price the Red Sox just paid for Crochet. I think if you can get another starting pitcher in the door, whether it be a young stud, either from the Mariners or more likely the Pirates, I think, because I don't know if the Mariners are trading one of those young studs, or if they're taking on a guy who's making money like Luis Castillo, or if they sign a Walker Buehler. I think their goal is to take advantage of the trade market for pitching and be able to flip a guy with 4 years of team control and Cutter Crawford to, I guess, sort of get back some of the prospect capital that they just lost trading for Crochet. It's kind of like if pulled off, it would be kind of like a big market flex that we just haven't seen from them in years, which is to just be pay money to get the starting pitching and bring back some prospect depth, which, I mean, I know that they still have a very good farm system in Boston, but you know, once Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell and Marcelo Meyer graduate, it takes a step back, and you kind of want that next wave in the door. And if you can do it without really sacrificing from the major league roster, if you acquire a starting pitcher making money and trade one that's not, it's a pretty good way to regenerate the farm system. That's kind of just my running theory with it, though.
Oh, it makes that. Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot more sense. I mean, you guys did give up a lot. I mean, you gave up, I think what you guys did was paid the Getz fee, the Getz premium. I mean, you gave up what, 4, 5, 11, and 15 of your prospects. Those are your numbered prospects that you gave up in your system. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Like, that's huge. But I thought that was fair because you didn't give up your 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought it was a good deal. I honestly
agree.
This is one of those trades where I was like, okay, like we don't see normally. It's like, oh, who got fleeced? That's what we're looking for. It's like, okay, well, who messed up here? Or
right.
I mean, even the Bellinger thing, like that trade, they're just like, Yankees are like, yeah, look, like we don't need Soto. Like, yeah, okay,
okay,
but sure. Yeah, sure, yeah, sure. The coping mechanism
sure.
is insane. Yeah, yeah, it's insane. But that was a Cubs win. Like they got Tucker, better defensive player, can clearly hit better as of late, and they just removed a ton of very player friendly contract off their books. And so when we still look at trades like that, it's like, okay, someone won the trade. Obviously you look at the craziness when it came to the Blue Jays and the, Guardians. And then you're mm-hmm. like, I was like, oh wow. Like Blue Jays are out of their minds. They really care about defense way too much. And then all of a sudden Horwitz gets moved around to Pittsburgh. Again, and I'm like, yeah. I feel like the Pittsburgh Pirates won that trade. Cause I'm personally high on Horwitz. Like his performance last year was awesome. And I was like, Mariners, come on, second base. There you go. Come on, get him. Right. I mean, no chance now.
Yeah, no. I think what you've gotten to though is that we've kind of gone full circle here, and you're right. Most trades are like what trades are supposed to be, right, is mutually beneficial. And typically what happens is one team is looking more in the future, one team is looking more now. What complicates the Mariners trade is that both of these teams are looking now. Like they're looking to compete now. The Mariners think they can win the American League West. They need to do things to get there, but the Astros, as active as they've been, they have gotten worse over the last week than they were at the end of the year. That's just a fact. Like they're still good, but you weren't that far off from them last year. In fact, you were better than them for most of the season. Not long enough, but
until my birthday, and then they went downhill.
Well, that's your fault. But yeah. So like when you look at trades, right, they're supposed to be mutually beneficial, but typically they happen when two teams are on opposite ends of their timeline. The Mariners and the Red Sox are about at the same spot. The Mariners might be slightly ahead, but it's the Red Sox. You know, the Red Sox aren't looking to take steps back all that often. They want to constantly win. And that's why they're still linked to Bregman. That's why they're still linked to Burns, right? They're still shopping at the top of the market. So if trades are supposed to be mutually beneficial, how do two contenders, you know, who are ultimately fighting for the same thing, right? They want to win the American League. How do they come together to make a trade that is mutually beneficial? And I think the thing that's not being said by mostly the Mariners, again, from my perspective, from Mariners fans, is that simply put, they don't. Because the Mariners are not going to give Luis Castillo away for anything short of what they feel like is an overpay. Because of the pitching market, because of what they have on hand, they're not looking to make necessarily a mutually beneficial trade. They're looking to get significantly better, or worst case scenario, they roll into next season with the best pitching staff, the best starting staff in the American League, 1 through 5. Like, oh no, that's not a terrible thing. Again, they don't need the money to go sign Carlos Santana or whatever. So they're not going to do that. So I think at the end of the day, what just needs to be admitted by both sides here is that the Mariners want Casas plus for Luis Castillo. And I think that plus is probably a Cutter Crawford. Maybe it's Rafaela, the Red Sox don't have the second baseman that the Mariners need as a headliner. They don't have the third baseman the Mariners need as a headliner. They have a first baseman, which the Mariners do need, but it's a first baseman. It's not as valuable as those other positions. That's just a fact, right? We all know that. At least that's how the league's valuing guys. So the Mariners are right to say, we want Casas, but we also want Cutter Crawford, or we also want Rob. Like, we need to get better from this trade. And Casas for Castillo straight up, we don't know if we're better. However, the Red Sox are also right to look at that and say, no, neither team is in the wrong here, right? It's just
and the truth is neither team's in a position of desperation,
right?
Because exactly. Like you said with the Mariners, like their worst case scenario here, okay, we'll just roll out the best starting mm-hmm. pitching staff in baseball, the best five man rotation in baseball, and the Red Sox, they have a five man rotation, like, and they can mm-hmm. they can sign guys in free agency. There's other mm-hmm. avenues. I don't know if and when we're going to see either of these teams be desperate in this scenario, right. Just because I don't think the Mariners ever really had a reason to be desperate, but if they ever did, it would have been for Christian Walker. And now right. He's off the market. If the Red Sox were going to get desperate, it would have been before they had Garrett Crochet in the fold. There was Alex mm-hmm. Speer of the Boston Globe out here said that those talks, the Castillo to Boston talks, were at their hottest right before the Garrett Crochet deal went down. And as soon as that deal went down, desperation from the Red Sox considerably lower. Like, the reason the Crochet deal got done is because when Max Fried went to the Yankees, was off the board. Desperation high. Craig Breslow texts Chris Getz. They get a deal done within a day. Now I don't see the desperation there from either side to push a team to take such a big plunge to get a deal over the finish line when it's a deal that doesn't need to happen for either side.
Right. And I think that's where you get into this idea that, like, okay, you can still work a deal here because Castillo still makes sense for the Red Sox. Casas still makes sense for the Mariners. Like, both of these teams seem to have some level of interest in those players still, even with the moves the Red Sox have made. But obviously the more players you add to a deal, the more variables there are, the less likely it is that the deal gets done. So if the Mariners want Casas and Crawford, the Red Sox be like, well, we're not doing that. You have to give us more. Well, it's like, okay, well, what's more? Do you want, like, Harry Ford? Like, do you want prospects like Harry Ford?
I think if it was Casas and Cutter, just based off of what I know was offered from the Red Sox, I think the Red Sox are going to say, give us one of the four young guys.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
Yeah, and then that's going to be a non-starter. Yeah, it's going to be right. A non-starter for them.
Right. So, like, I think in a year, like next winter, like Crawford and Casas for a guy like Logan Gilbert might get something started. I don't think it's going to be enough for Gilbert, but the Mariners are about a year away from having to decide if they think they can re-sign Gilbert or if they think they're going to trade him. That's not this winter. So the timing's off. The roster fit is a little bit off. Again, if Casas could play second base, well, he probably wouldn't be on the block, but if he could, then the Mariners would be very interested in that. And if Castillo was a couple years younger, you know, the Red Sox might be more interested in that. And if he was making a little bit less money, they might be more interested in that. So ultimately, at the end of the day, I don't think the Mariners and the Red Sox are that great of a trade fit, specifically from what I know the Mariners are looking for. Again, like, is there a path where it's like, hey, we'll give you Castillo and, like, I don't know, Harry Ford and, like, we'll give you like Harry Ford and like two more top 10 prospects. And we'll take Casas and we'll take one of your contracts. So, like, you're not just adding 24 million. We'll take Yoshida. Right. And so now you're only adding $7 million. Does that get us Crawford? If we add, you know, a pretty good prospect like Harry Ford, you know, like, you can start to kind of maneuver the, but again, the more pieces you add, the more complicated it gets.
But Harry Ford would be an interesting one.
I thought maybe because you guys lost Teal.
Exactly. They just traded Teal. Connor Wong, fine offensive catcher, took a big step back defensively last year. I mean, I know they're hiring new people to work with their catchers this year, and they're obviously going to see how it goes with him. But there's a good chance that this team's going to be on the lookout for a catcher of the future. Mariners in an interesting lineup there, just because obviously Cal Raleigh, one of if not the best catchers in baseball. Mm-hmm. So it's like Harry Ford getting closer to the bigs, like, where do you go there? It's not like Cal Raleigh's a guy that you're going to DH. He's the best defensive catcher in the league. So it's interesting. They'll have to make a call there at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of have a bitter take on that one. It's it's more of like a, I want to say it's a harsh reality, but the Mariners aren't going to extend Cal Raleigh until they have to. Like, if that's all.
Yeah.
If at all. And if they have Harry Ford and he turns out to be as good or close to, maybe his power comes up in the next year or so. Maybe they're able to transform him some way. I know there's been talks about him going to the outfield, but, like, if the Mariners don't have to spend, you know, Realmuto money on Cal Raleigh because they have Harry Ford, you know, he might not be a Mariner for very much longer, which I mean,
the good news with, yeah, it is, you know, one of the biggest hits of the last 20 years for the Mariners. It's not saying much, but it's a fact.
yeah.
The, like, the nice thing about that though, is that you don't have to pay, you don't have to pay Cal for 3 years. Like, you're going to pay him through arbitration, but you get him for three more years at well below mm-hmm. market price. You have time to find the catcher, right? So the one thing I will say, like, in regards to Harry Ford, is that there may not be a more polarizing prospect, like, in front offices in baseball than Harry Ford. Because if you think he can catch, right, and there are some who don't, maybe the Red Sox are one of them, I don't know. But if you think he can catch, he is a 55, you know, 60 grade runner as a catcher, stole 30 bags this year. Like, he's basically, you know, Russell Martin, right? Like, he walks a ton. He's really athletic, can play actually other places besides catcher. So that's an opportunity. Is he ever going to hit for a ton of power? I don't know. I know hitting at Fenway Park would probably help him a little bit, but, you know, it's one of those things, like, if you think he can catch, he's a really good prospect. If you don't think he can catch, he's a good prospect. He's not like a great prospect. He's not a headliner because there's not a ton of power there. So it's kind of an iffy, you know, parallel or profile, I should say, to Ford, because some teams will love him, some teams won't. But there's a lot to, it's a lot of, you know, bat to ball skill, a lot of, you know, base on ball, a lot of athleticism, and the power might still come because he's 22, like, he's 21. Sorry. Like, it feels like he's been around forever. He's 21 years old. He's a junior in college, you know, like, that's who he is right now. So Ford is fascinating. I don't know how the Mariners feel about his ability to catch. I do think catcher defense is going to be less important in a couple of years. They're going to institute the automatic ball strike, or at least the challenge system, at that point. And then it's all about throw and all that. And Ford is more than capable of, you know, throwing guys out at a catcher. So yeah, Harry Ford, I don't know if the Mariners think he can catch or not. I would assume they do, because they've kept him back there, at kind of detriment to developing the power. But I don't know if the Red Sox do, and that might be the bigger question mark here.
Yeah, catcher defense has been a problem for the Red Sox. So it would be, and I don't know how they see him specifically, but when evaluating catchers, and you can see it in how they've made decisions. They just traded for Carlos Narvaez from the Yankees, basically only catcher defense right there. It's been a priority the last couple of years. They've been trying to make it better because it's been a detriment to the pitching development. It's been a detriment at the big league level. So I do think that is going to be something they place a lot of value on when evaluating that spot in the future.
I was going to ask, because I saw a post about you guys interviewed Tyler O'Neill when he was with you guys, when he was in Boston before he signed with the Orioles. And like, I guess apparently, like, Boston didn't even really approach him or even reach out to him about extending and staying in Boston. And I thought he did a great year with you guys. Is there any backstory on that? Anything that you were able to pick up as far as why Tyler O'Neill was not on the list? Cause as far as I know, you guys still have, I mean, kind of a spot for your guys' outfield, unless it's going straight through with, you know, Rafaela or, you know, is that the goal? Is that the idea that you're going to bring up Anthony this season and he's going to take over?
I do think that Anthony's going to make his debut early on, and he is going to take over probably right field in the future. But the Tyler O'Neill discussion was one that Red Sox people had early on. Like, do they give him the qualifying offer? Do they not? I personally was in favor of them giving him the qualifying offer. They chose not to do it. This team without him certainly lacks that right-handed power bat that is definitely needed when you're playing at Fenway Park. The team does not have much right-handed hitting at all with him not there.
In the starting, at least.
Yeah.
Per Fangraphs, you know, I don't know how that's going to change as you go, but yeah.
But they were not aggressive with him. It felt like their attention was on Juan Soto, and they did set up, you know, they'd shown interest in other guys as contingency plans. Didn't feel like Tyler O'Neill was in those contingency plans. Certainly a team with the Red Sox that struck out way too much last year, and Tyler O'Neill strikes out a lot. So you'd think that that was probably the biggest factor, because it certainly wasn't like a clubhouse thing. Like, he's a great guy, well liked by teammates, by peers, by people in the city. Like, he was fans really liked him. Obviously staying on the field was and always has been a problem with him. But really the only two things I can think of are they probably wanted a guy who can be on the field more and maybe want a guy who's going to strike out less. It's really the only two logical explanations for why there was such a little interest there.
Okay. Well, I mean, I can understand that as far as the strikeouts go. I mean, the same philosophy as the Mariners, you know, they claimed that was the reason for getting rid of the guys that they did, even though we all know it was a salary dump in 2023, but, or I should say going into 2024, but, yeah, the strikeouts can always be an issue. And then, yeah, of course, like you're saying, prospects coming up and getting that opportunity to play in the outfield. I mean, even though you guys seem to be stacked everywhere as far as your infield, a lot of young guys. I mean, who's the oldest guy in your guys' offense?
Story.
Ref Snyder. 33. Yeah. Like, that's the oldest you have on your team. Like, that's, you got a pretty young squad, I mean, for the most part. But I mean, I guess circling back to Casas, because obviously, you know, what if we took away Castillo? Like, has there been any talks at all? Is there anybody at all that would be on the radar that would fill a slot that they're looking to get? And now I'm not talking like younger pitchers in the rotation, but just maybe even prospects. And I understand, Colby also mentioned we're in the same boat as far as being contenders and stuff. For us, it shouldn't take as much considering how wide open the AL West is and the AL East being a lot more competitive with the Yankees and the Orioles trying to bolster themselves. Orioles are being confusing. I don't understand what they're doing, at least the Yankees, you know, they're going out and they are spending the money they were going to spend on Soto, and they're coping. They're, you know, when you get broken up with and you've got to go out and buy something nice to make yourself feel good, that's what they're doing. So, do you think there's any possibility that out of left field, like we're hearing Castillo, they're like, trade done. Mariners, Boston, Cass is going to Seattle. Boston's getting fill in the blank.
I think if they're trading Casas, it's going to be for a frontline type of starter. I think that's what they're going to hold out for there. Whether it be with the Mariners or maybe the Pirates, I feel like those are really the only two logical destinations there. I don't think they would trade him for prospects. I think that this is the messaging from that front office has been, we're ready to win now. And I don't see them trading straight for prospects unless it's an area of depth, which first base is not. It would really only be if they sign an outfielder. I could see them trading Willy or Abreu maybe for prospect depth. If they acquire a starting pitcher, I could see them trading Cutter Crawford for prospect depth. But Casas, I think a guy like him is only going to be dealt if they're getting what they perceive to be a frontline kind of starting pitcher.
Yeah, which is where I kind of land with the whole Castillo Casas deal. Is just the, I feel like this was definitely a smoke show to get other teams interested in trade talks, to get in on the bidding war, to, like you mentioned, also, you know, get in the trading path instead of spending insane amount of money on people that are not exactly showing that they can go a whole season. The Matthew Boyd, for example, good for the Cubs. I mean, I think it's a good fit for them because compared to what they had last year, great. But yeah, there's just a lot of question marks. But I just really wanted to hash this out because it was like there's so much discourse between the two sides, and I feel like it was going nowhere. You know, it's just a bunch of bickering. Oh, he's not worth it. Oh, he's not worth it. It's like there needs.
It's like the fan bases are very far apart too. It's like usually the front offices are far apart. And fan bases can kind of like find that middle ground that it takes front offices so long to get to, because you obviously don't have to negotiate as a fan. You just kind of throw a deal out there that seems fair and maybe you get close. I think the Cubs, you bring up the Cubs, if not the Red Sox, that might be the next most, maybe even more logical, to be honest with you, partner for a Castillo deal, especially with Nico Horner out there.
Right. Yeah. If they're willing to move him. that would be the guy, because I do know the Mariners like Nico Horner. They have for a couple of years. He plays second base, which harder to fill in free agency. But because they traded Paredes, you know, they already opened up the one spot they need for Shaw. Are they going to trade Horner? Maybe. I don't know. The Lizardo deal fell through. I would say this. Like, I think the Mariners and – like, I think the Red Sox could end up with Castillo. And – or, yeah, and I think – Casas could be in play in that deal, but he doesn't go to the Mariners. I think if Castillo is traded, I think, and the Red Sox are involved, it's going to be a three-team trade. And maybe it's
with the Cubs.
It could be the Cubs. I threw out the Nationals the other day, like Luis Garcia is a second baseman, 2020 type of guy, good player. Like, they desperately need a first baseman. They're checking in. So maybe there's a three-way there, but at the end of the day, I don't think Castillo for Casas straight up is happening. I don't think, you know, Casas and Rafaela or Casas and Crawford for Castillo straight up is happening. And I think the more pieces you have to add to try and, you know, find common ground, the less likely it is that a trade happens. The closest thing I've gotten to like a trade proposal where I'm like, okay, maybe this is like on the right track is Crawford and Casas for Castillo and Harry Ford. And there's probably more pieces that need to come from Seattle on that side, but that's the closest I've gotten. And even that, I'm like, it doesn't seem to fit quite well. So I do think that, you know, if Castillo is moved, I do think that it's most likely going to be in a three-team deal, and Boston could play a big role in that. So could Chicago. But yeah, you know, I've been looking, obviously talking about this thing pretty much every day for the last week, because Mariner fans like to hear about it. Judging from our comments, the Red Sox fans love to hear about this. Like, it's an exciting trade. Both sides, they're continually linked to each other.
Continuously?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Third podcast of the day. They keep on getting linked together. So I think it makes sense, right, that there's this much, you know, discussion happening between fan bases and all that stuff. But I do think at the end of the day, like I said, the Red Sox, they are totally justified for looking at Castillo for Casas plus, like, which is what the Mariners have been asking for. The Red Sox should look at that and be like, no, like, we'll check elsewhere. And the Mariners should absolutely look at, you know, Castillo for Casas and go like, does that actually make us better in 2025? No. So we need more than that. And so I think both sides are justified in their asking price. And I think that's why a deal is unlikely to get done, because like you said, neither side is desperate. Like, they don't have to move this player that they're talking about. So I just don't think they're a great fit.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, it's just, I don't know why it's so hot. It is such a hot topic. And it seems like we all kind of agree, you know, it's like, no, like this, I do think a third team would be perfect. And I much favor the Cubs, because I think that they have players that Boston could use, that we could use. It kind of fills that void. And then there's that value that comes in there. I was talking to Colby before we started recording, that I was talking with the Locked On Cubs guys, it was Sam Olber, and kind of throwing trade ideas out there. And it seems like the Cubs, for the most part, are very willing to let go of Nico Horner. Like, he's very much a viable option to move off of. They're even willing, depending on who the return is, to move off of Bush. But of course, things have to fall into place. And my idea was like, okay, they should sign Bregman, because that would just be a perfect match, considering that Kyle Tucker's over there now. Makes it a nice, easy transition for everybody, and that's an elite team, the NL Central. And luckily for us three here, it doesn't affect our division. So we can talk about it and dream about it all day. But I think the Red Sox should be signing Corbin Burnes. That's my take on it. 3-year deal. 3 years, he can still re-sign and get an even bigger chunk of changes if he wants, and he would just look good in a Red Sox uniform at this point. And you guys want a starting pitcher, like, that's the gold mine. That's the one to hit. Mm-hmm. It's not something the Mariners are going to touch, obviously, but like, if I'm rooting for an AL East team to get Burnes, it's the Red Sox. So
I don't think Sox fans would complain about it. They've been Sox fans have been pushing hard for that one for a while.
Yeah, I think it comes down to money at that point. But I bet you the Blue Jays are offering the largest contract, but he's kind of like,
nah, he's not going.
I don't think he wants the Giants.
He wants the Giants. Yeah, and they know it.
I unfortunately, I think Toronto is falling for the Ohtani trap where they think they have a shot. And really all it is like, no, Ohtani's going to the Dodgers. You're the only person on earth that doesn't know it. And you're getting played. I think it's happening again with Burns. I think it happened again with Soto. Like the Blue Jays are in a rough spot.
They need to clean up house. They need to take care of their own and figure out what they're doing from now. They need some sort of foundation because right now they have a plot of land and there's nothing to build on because it's all mush. Terrible.
I was shocked by how bad that roster was when I looked at it the other day. Like as is right now, I'm like, it's not holy great. Cow, this Blue Jays team is not good.
They need a rebuild badly, and it feels like they're going to mess it up because if you're going to do it, you got to do it before the deadline. If you pass the deadline, that's that.
I would argue that they need to do it now. A full year of Vladdy is going to get you a lot more than a deadline trade.
100%. I have it on good authority that the Seattle Mariners offered, and this is a direct quote here, a shit ton for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at the deadline last year. And I think that included Colt Emerson. I think that included Laz Monte. Like it included like three of their top five prospects. And I think Toronto held out and was like, we want Bryce Miller or Brian Wu. And Seattle's just like, no. But yeah, again, have very good haul. Yeah.
That's a Emerson, good haul too.
Especially if you're going to rebuild, like if you're trading Vlad, you're going to full rebuild. So you get Emerson's top.
Bo doesn't want to be there.
Yeah. Emerson's top 25, you know, in baseball with the chance to go up. Laz's top 60, you know, I think it was three top 100 prospects. And now there's no way the Mariners would do that. Not for a year.
Toronto should have done that.
Yeah.
There's your three-way trade. you throw in some prospects going to Toronto and then they, you know, Vladdy goes somewhere and Casas goes somewhere.
Boston might just trade for Vlad. Like, screw the three.
That's my white whale right there.
Vlad, I think that's a lot of fan bases right there. Give me Vlad. But you're only going to get him for a year. There's no shot he signs an extension wherever he's traded to. So you're only going to get him for a year. And because of that, and, you know, we know what he rejected already. Like, it's going to cost you $450 million to keep minimum. Vlad. Yeah, like... You're not. Well,
I also did. I think Jared Carrabba's made a post like a week ago, and he was just asking like, "Why the hell does nobody want to sign in Toronto?" And of course, like my obvious response was because the team sucks, but Vladdy's not going to stick around. But then I was also thinking like, okay, well, if you look at the taxes up there, and some people were like, "Well, it's pretty relative to New York and California," it's like it. It is if you just do the base tax, but if you do Providence tax along with what you would owe after that, it's like another $10 million. Like you get $32 million a year, your gross is like seven. It's insane. So for like that, that's like something that people aren't talking about. And there has been many people like, oh, well, you get that back once you retire and all that stuff. It's like they don't want to wait till retirement to get their money back. Like
I... Yeah. What's interesting, by the way, Washington, no state income tax. And if I'm not mistaken, Massachusetts, are they a no state income tax state as well?
No, they're not. Massachusetts closer to the New York side of things than that. Yeah.
I was trying, there's like four states that have no income tax that have major league
Texas.
Teams. Texas is one, Washington is one. And I feel like there was one like on the East Coast, but I couldn't remember what I thought maybe Massachusetts, but. But Vladdy's not signed in Seattle either. I'm not trying to pitch that right now, but
you should. Yeah. You should throw that out there in the world. Trust it's a small enough channel. Nobody will watch this. Dude. Fine.
Last winter we had like three different thumbnails with Shohei Ohtani on them, even though we knew there was no shot he was signing with Seattle. We're not above a little clickbait over on
it's Locked clickbait. On there. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Oh, you got a fire going on out there. That sounds like Massachusetts.
Yeah, that's me. That's right behind me.
Yeah. something's going down out there. Sound the alarm, big trade. I don't know. This has been fun. I really do appreciate you guys. I'm trying to think of anything else that we can cover before then. You mentioned the Nationals, like they have been just as quiet as the Blue Jays, quieter than the Blue Jays, just as quiet as the Mariners. And I don't know, that could be that could be interesting. Of course, every time I open up Seattle Times and I see some sort of article, I just roll my eyes, like the latest one that came out today, the timeless approach for hitting at T-Mobile Park. Yeah. And it's like, okay.
You got to give writers something to write about. Otherwise, they're just going to recycle the same stuff. And
yeah, but it's
Adam how to hit a T-Mobile Park is evergreen material. So,
yeah. Well, tell you what, only invest in your favorite Colby slap hitters and you'll be fine. Just get a bunch of Ichiros out there, slap hitting. There's no bombs ever.
I mean, and if you get players as good at it as Ichiro. If you could get players who are as good at it as Ichiro was and also give you the defense and the base running that Ichiro did, you'd win 120 games. So sign me up. Like
Harry Ford. There we go. Let's just move Cal out of the way. Ichiro.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Give us Cassis and Crawford for Raleigh.
No, thanks.
I'm putting that out. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that'd be the meltdown that would happen. It would be entertaining to watch. I would say that.
I'm wondering what the tipping point is for the Mariner fan base to just be like, we're done until something happens here, because they're just too loyal. Yeah, that's true. Or Julio. I think after last year. Any last things before we sign off? We've been on an hour, so this is perfect. I appreciate you guys coming on.
Yeah, no, appreciate you having me.
Yeah. It's fun.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys for watching this episode, Baseball Chaos. It's been chaotic. And it's funny that we talk about all this all to come to a conclusion that nothing's happening. So super anticlimactic. But down below in the description will be the links to both of these guys' channels, the podcast. If you guys want to go ahead and subscribe and check them out and listen to them, get a little more in depth as far as the Mariners and the Red Sox. Again, subscribe here. This week there is no giveaway because I only put out like two videos. So next week there will be a giveaway. All you have to do is comment on these videos as many times as you want. Make sure you're subscribed and you guys can take home something nice. So again, you guys, Gordo, Colby, thank you for joining me. And we'll see you guys on the next one.